The man who passes the sentence should swing the sword.
I've won every battle, but I'm losing this war.
Show them how it feels to lose what they love.
Everyone is mine to torment.
The long night is coming. And the dead come with it.
Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. You do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up. Please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left? Gaping pit waiting to swallow us all. Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello and welcome back to Storm of Spoilers Off Season Tour. My name's Dave Gonzalez, and in this upcoming season of Game of Thrones, I believe I'm pledging my fealty to the Dragon Queen.
And I'm Neil Miller, in for Joanna this week, and in this upcoming season of Game of Thrones, I think I'm still pledging my loyalty to Dorne, because those women are pretty vindictive, and if anyone's going to turn over the Targaryen rule again, it's going to be my people in Dorne. So,
all right. In case you guys haven't noticed, we are down to Joanna Robinson, but we are returning to the original subject matter of this podcast, which is, of course, Game of Thrones. We are way before the seventh season, which will hit in summer 2017. It is December 2016, but we think we got some stuff figured out, or at least there are some big enough rumors out there and some set photos that we could start piecing together some big questions. So we thought we would pause in our not Game of Thrones off-season tour and return and, you know, dust off the flat surfaces in the Citadel of Crazy Town and clear up all the Raven poop that I'm sure has accumulated. And check in with what's going on in Westeros.
Yeah,
of course.
I mean, basically, Joanna sent us back on our own to the Citadel to clean up.
Yeah. Well, we all thought we were going to clean up together, and then Joanna had to beg out at the last second. So
back to
service we go, Neil. And we actually we could start with doing another one of our jobs. Neil, do we have any reviews this week?
We do. We have two. We have a sort of a lukewarm one and a nice friendly one.
All right.
The first one comes from Jeff. It is titled Good Podcast, 3 stars. I typically enjoy this podcast. I enjoy the trio's thoughtful analysis of GOT, and I have enjoyed their off-season episodes. Please do Avatar and Legend of Korra. While I don't mind them bringing up social justice topics, I feel Joanna only highlights issues that affect her as a white woman. If the podcast is going to delve into social justice themes, I would like to see the crew highlight issues such as whitewashing, underrepresentation of actors of color, etc. You know, that's interesting feedback there, Jeff. We will I feel like we do sometimes.
I think we definitely do, and if Jeff wants to look up Republic City Dispatch on his podcast device, Joanna, myself, Matt Patches from Fighting in the War Room, and Devinder Hardaway from the Slash Filmcast actually did the entirety of Legend of Korra as it was airing, and definitely have an entire episode about race bending, because that show has a movie adaptation loosely based onto its world, where the races get all mixed up. So, yeah, nice. Occasionally we bring it up. Game of Thrones, I think there might be some validity in the fact that we don't talk about, certain Asian races basically not existing on the show, but we'll keep it up. We try to stay topical.
Yeah, I think it is. Well, also, Jeff, ask and ye shall receive. There you go. Great suggestion. But I also do think that Game of Thrones, since it's a complete fantasy land, it lends itself a lot better to doing the gender issues than it does necessarily all the different racial things.
For sure. Because we have Marvel shows horrible casting to argue with that about.
All right. And then the second one is from Jenny Lee X33. Love the off-season tour. 5 stars. I started listening to A Storm of Spoilers on the off-season tour. A friend mentioned I should listen to the Stranger Things episode. So naturally, I did just that, and now I'm hooked. I think this is a great group, and they have intelligent, critical conversations about things they like, mostly Game of Thrones. But during the off-season tour, there have been great episodes on Marvel, Harry Potter, etc. I particularly love the Fantastic Beasts episode. I feel like a lot of my concerns about the film were voiced, but I also appreciate the crew didn't write off the film immediately for its faults. They never act jaded or above it all, which is wonderful in an age where everything seems to exhaust people. I cannot wait to listen to the host actually talk about Game of Thrones for an entire episode next week. Jenny, thank you for your review that, you know, it's sort of what we strive for around here, and we are happy to give you a Game of Thrones episode this week.
Yeah, this has actually been my escape from most of this year, and where I've felt exhausted in all my other aspects of my life.
Yeah.
So to come here and talk about like pop culture I love, that's the shit.
Yeah.
And this week, we're going to talk about, you know, some stuff that I haven't really been brushing up on perhaps as well as I should. First person who loves spoilers and who loves Game of Thrones. And for an episode that had the good old-fashioned introduction on it about all the things we could pull together to figure out what's going on in Westeros, I'm excited to delve back into this, sort of like picking my brain and getting back in Game of Thrones mode before doing this episode. I forgot how much I've invested into this fantasy world. So as the world around us brings this year of crazy heartbreak to an end, we are going to delve back into Game of Thrones, the future past, right after this message. Welcome back, guys. We are ready to figure out what happens when Dany comes to Westeros, which we can at least agree is going to happen next season. When is it going to happen? Maybe we're going to discuss that first. Neil has a structure for us to sort of dance around what we think we know about Game of Thrones season 7 and hopefully whet everybody's appetite for the long actual winter ahead. Neil, how do you want to run this bevy of information?
Well, we've got a lot of stuff that we could talk about. And first, I think it's worth giving some credit where credit is due. There are several threads on Reddit that have been invaluable in their organization of all the rumors. Of course, we've been scouring over our friends Watchers on the Wall, and they've been doing a great job of keeping things together. But the guys at in the Free Folk subreddit, there is one particular post that sort of breaks down to the best of their ability all of the different things that will happen kind of by episodes. But instead of just going through episode by episode, I thought it might be even more fun to look at sort of just like a couple of the huge rumors that exist for season 7 and kind of talk through a couple of these. And the folks over at whatculture.com, another pretty good website, I know those guys, have a list of 8 huge rumors that they've just put up this week. So I think we should go through these. We'll reference some Reddit stuff. It is worth saying for the folks who are sensitive to production spoilers that this episode will be almost all production spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, George R. R. Martin did talk a little bit about Winds of Winter recently and saying that, you know, it's towards the end of a story and it's not necessarily going to be a happy book or leave characters that we like in a happy place. But that could mean anything. And we don't even know right. How much of this season that applies to. So we're all production spoilers from here on out. And right. feelings. Production I mean, spoilers I, and feelings.
I feel like we had a lot of several characters land in unhappy places at the end of last year. So who knows? Some of that could be part of Winds of Winter.
Also, I don't see like a lot of characters ending in a happy place for the remainder of our episodes either. So I guess that was really was the vaguest possible.
Right. There's George really R. no... There's no happy places left in Westeros at this point, unless you are a White Walker or White Walker fan.
Yeah, then
they
you're
could
ascendant.
End up real happy. Yes. Okay, so we are going to just kind of run through these, talk about whether or not we think they're plausible, and maybe some of the background information that we've found that makes them potentially going to happen. So the first one is that Dany will arrive in Westeros in episode one, which I feel like is the easiest one to say that's probably going to happen. Couple of reasons why I think this is true. One is that they're only working with, what, 7 episodes this year?
Correct.
6? Yeah, this is 7 episodes. So they're only working with 7 episodes. They've got to get to the point here. So there's the long-standing Game of Thrones tradition of dragging everything out with regard to Daenerys' storyline sort of has to end this season. So I think that's true. It also, it does seem, as we've talked about on previous Game of Thrones segments, that the meetings that Daenerys has with other influential characters kind of happen in the first couple episodes, so she's got to get herself situated. My question to you, Dave, is, where does Daenerys land?
I believe we're a fan of her taking the seat at Dragonstone. Mm-hmm. And I believe I've seen a picture that has been purported to be that throne, and it looks pretty badass, like dragon scales carved into rock.
Ooh, I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty sweet. So it's like a rock face, but if you carve into it, it sort of has like a chiseled crystal look, and that has been carved into like a scaly throne, which I'm hoping is the Daenerys throne. Otherwise, it's somebody's like really good, crazy fan sculpture that made it around. But I like the idea of a Dragonstone perch, also because it puts her in good positioning. Eventually, if Jon doesn't come and decide to make a political alliance with her, Dragonstone is one of the sources that we know of in the series of Dragonglass, mm-hmm. which will eventually prove important. So I would like my team of Dragon Queen team to be sitting on that stockpile if it exists.
Right. And my, you know, as a member of Team Dorne, I always thought that Daenerys would be landing in Dorne. There is still a little bit of hope for that, though, because there have been shots of people filming sort of a siege of Highgarden, which is all the way in the west. Mm-hmm. So the question is, and Daenerys apparently shows up at some point and maybe lights some Lannisters on fire or lights some Tarleys on fire. I don't know who she lights on fire. It's irrelevant yet. The question is whether or not that happens very early or very late, because that would require her to go all the way across the country. So I still think it's possible she lands in Dorne, but I think Dragonstone's going to be sort of the big Daenerys set piece of the year either way.
Well, we don't really have an idea as to what her plan is, but I think we might have a future point that sort of brings that into question. So I'll put a pin in that.
Right. And it ultimately brings us to our second piece, which is that Jon and Dany meet very early on. And this was sort of born out of the fact that the director on set for their meeting was that guy whose name I can't remember. Mark Millard.
Yes.
So Mark Millard, who is directing episodes 2 and 3, has been on set when Dany receives Jon on the beaches, those set photos that we've seen. So I guess we're expecting that by episode 3 at the very least. And this would be potentially him coming to either seek Dragonstone or Dragon Glass, or him trying to make an alliance.
Or her trying to make an alliance, or announcing herself. I don't know how a conquering queen announces her return to her homelands.
Yeah.
Do you, like, call everybody, or do you just, like, burn a town and then, like, follow the dragon?
Right. Yeah, I think the question is whether or not she's going to try and use the whatever cachet is left of the Targaryen name, because I think she's been told for a long time that there are secret Targaryen voters all over the country, and they're just shy. They're shy Targaryen voters. And that when she shows up, those people are going to come out of the woodwork and join her cause. So we'll see if that's how she plays it. You know, it's the real question is, because we talked about this before, John and Danny don't know that they're related.
Right.
So unless somebody shows up and tells John, which I don't think is going to happen, it could be a little tense.
Yeah. If she just calls all the lords of Westeros to, you know, come have a talk with her, it's a very good possibility that these two don't discover their relationship until much longer. Like, we had the Tower of Joy being filmed about, you know, early on last year. We had a very good idea of what was being filmed there, but it didn't pop up till the finale of the season. So maybe we're going to continue to be teased by these two, you know, just not meeting anybody old enough to really know what's going on.
Right. So sad. Howland Reed. Probably not going to show up. Sorry, guys.
Wandering in the boneyard of literature, never to make it to screen.
So I think we're putting a thumbs up stamp on this one. John and Danny meeting early. That's one we can pretty much say yes to. The third one, that Jim Broadbent, everybody's favorite Hogwarts teacher. Although, is he? Is he your favorite? No? I don't think so.
He's a collector of talented people, but I can't say he's my favorite Hogwarts teacher. That would probably be Lupin when he was working there.
Okay. Snape was pretty good.
Snape's good, but pretty that effective. Seems, I don't know if he's the best teacher all the time.
But speaking of teaching things, Jim Broadbent is being rumored to play a Grand Maester of the Citadel. I mean, this one just feels cookie cutter easy.
Yeah, it feels right.
And it goes to the sort of casting that they've done of these really talented, older, well-respected actors in sort of smaller but influential parts. You know, the Ian McShanes and Jonathan Pryce, although Jonathan Pryce stuck around a lot longer, or Max von Sydow last year. Mm-hmm. So it feels right that somebody like Jim Broadbent would come along and be Sam's mentor and help him discover that Dragonfire is the key, I think is still where I'm holding as to what Sam's going to learn, even though I feel like they could have just sort of logicked that one out long time ago.
They could maybe figure that out. Maybe he's there trying to figure something out when he, you know, gets called back to battle for another side by other people. You know, like maybe someone needs to cure some sort of crazy disease that's turning his skin into cracked mud and needs some help. And then Jorah's like, well, I could tell you what Dragon Glass does. My dad was a Lord Commander. Dad, right? Yeah. His dad was
the Lord Commander. Uncle?
Uncle.
Dad? Brother? No, wait. Yeah, that might have been his dad.
I think it's the dad, because he got all depressed when Tyrion eventually told him.
This is how rusty I am with Game of Thrones things right now.
It's got to figure out how the Mormonts are related. I like that idea, and he's got the sword. And so maybe he doesn't have to learn something like we thought. Maybe he just needs somebody else to bring him into the story. Or someone could be like, your dad's being an asshole out there. Like, get out there, eldest Tarly, and use your family sword. And,
that's true. I do think, so we did get an interesting question this week from a reader, and it's a very long email, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. Let me look up who it was.
Good podcast.
Good podcast right now. Oh, so it's from James B. Basically, about the inconsistency of the wall's magic, because I think that's the other thing that Sam could be discovering is the wall's magic, which is something that is talked about a lot in the books, but the show hasn't really dealt with it. The show hasn't dealt with it because there's a lot of weird stuff in season one, like the rules aren't established properly. So the Night's Watch does bring a corpse across the wall and into Castle Black.
Oh yeah, and it wakes up.
And it wakes up and it goes after Lord Commander Mormont. So there's all kinds of James's email sort of poses all these questions about, like, well, what are the rules there? Like, if it comes across as a corpse, can it wake up? Does the magic of the Night's King extend beyond the wall, even if he's on one side? Like, because if so, why wouldn't he just raise an army of all the dead bodies in Westeros already that are south of the wall?
Yeah. Is there like a threshold? Is it like the front gate of the wall is the threshold?
Right. And he ultimately posits, which I think is probably the most likely explanation, that George R.R. Martin did not have a plan for this in book one and then had to come up with one later.
All right. Yeah.
So
makes sense.
That might explain the inconsistency. And although I can't think, his real question to us was, can you think of a different reason why the rules aren't quite as consistent? Like, Cold Hands cannot go through the wall, and that's established very clearly in both the books and the show. But there are White Walkers that end up on the other side of the wall.
I mean, this is also has to be something that has to eventually be breakable, so I imagine.
Right. Which we assume is like going to be Bran.
Right. But that would require some sort of hard rule being established as it's being broken, which isn't the greatest trope. But yeah, maybe it is something about being like ushered across or...
Yeah, like if the Night's Watch brings you across, it's cool. But
or is there... With like Cold Hands, it seems like it's a gradual transformation, but like other corpses just sort of like... go down and then come back up. Can you like be infected and go down and then like not be so like raised fully before, until I don't know.
Yeah. It's maybe there's like a timer to it.
Well, but we're going to have to get a definitive answer. And if that answer isn't definitive, then the correct assumption is nobody knew. It's going to be important.
Right. I have a feeling by the end of this season, we may know whether or not it was part of the plan all along or whether or not it was just one of those things they had to sort of retcon.
Just the second boat in the Lost flashback.
All right. So that Jim Broadbent is going to, as far as we know, play the Grand Maester. And that should be fun because, you know, Sam hasn't really had anything to do for like 2 years. All right, here's one that I'm fascinated to get your take on, because it's about your guy. And it is the prediction that Littlefinger is going to get the chop. So at some point, Littlefinger's diminishing power over Sansa will lead to him being executed by... I don't know, by somebody. I guess, wait...
So I guess he'll be like sentenced to death because Sansa will just figure out he's still talking to Cersei.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense now. When I first read it, I was like, I don't understand what that means.
She just got tired of him finally and just like, yeah. So
it's, I mean, that is so one thing that could do in Littlefinger, which is all the misdealings. The only person that, that really sort of understands the way he plays all sides at all times is Sansa. So the question is, does that make her more likely to have him killed, or does that make her more likely to think that she can play his game better than he can?
I mean, I think it's going to end up, it's going to end up on a couple of things, but I'm going to say the timing of when this happens in the season on how okay I am with it. Because I think some of the Starks are going to get back together. And whatever conflict is in between the siblings or whatever changes they see in each other by re-meeting, that has to shake the Littlefinger Sansa relationship. And then however Littlefinger screws up and lets Sansa learn that he's been passing on information, that information, I feel like, also has to be a betrayal. So even though he's a little shit of a character, mm-hmm. I'm still on his side, so I'm waiting for them to do the narrative work where this is, I think, the catharsis that it could be for people who have been watching him weasel in and out of stuff. But like, I do think they have to push it. I'm just worried that, like with Game of Thrones, they're either going to not push it or push it way too far. Because I think it has to be a balance. Because at the end of last season, there's that look that they share, which we've debated about what it means. I still think there's going to be a little of politicking between Jon and Sansa about who's going to run the North. Maybe mm-hmm. while, you know, Jon's gone to talk to Dany, that's when Littlefinger decides to, you know, play some politics, and maybe he fails at that. But I think he needs to do a little bit more to fall out of favor with Sansa. I don't buy a season 6 speech, no matter how great that speech is, of her dressing him down at carrying over to motivation to execution in season 7. I need a little bit more. So yeah. I don't want it to happen, but I could see it happening with a little bit of intrigue.
Okay. Now, because here's my slightly bigger question with Littlefinger, which is heading into this season. So for the previous 6 years now, well, I guess last season sort of threw this to the side, but Littlefinger's always been a step or two ahead of everyone else. So is he still a step ahead, or is he now sort of, his plans are evenly aligned? Like, he doesn't have he has not a move to make in advance. So that's the big question.
I feel like maybe he underestimated both Cersei and Jon, or at least didn't count on them both making it through their individual trials in their various places. So although he thinks of everything, I think he's definitely in his least advantageous possible position, because he needed to commit the Knights of the Vale, not with him and Sansa at the front of it, but to come save Jon. And right after pledging to a Cersei who was basically about to be executed by the Faith, but then they both, you know, escaped the jaws of fate, and now he's got a riff a little bit. So I don't think he's ahead anymore, unless there's a really long, long game. But it doesn't strike me that if Varys is the one that is taking into account the magic of the world that he's seen and that has hurt him, I feel like Littlefinger has always been purely politics. And as we transition into the more magical part of the story, maybe it's time for him to transition out.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I think that he was a step ahead. I think a lot of people assume that he underestimated Ramsay in what he would do to Sansa, but I think Littlefinger's plan the whole time was to have to rescue Sansa from the Boltons.
All right.
And I think that might have been his last big play to become Warden of the North. I think you're right in that he didn't expect Jon to make it. Or, you know, at that point, he didn't know that Jon was a thing, you know?
Right.
You know, for all we know, his Mockingbird Express could have told him that Jon was dead until he found out that Jon wasn't dead. So yeah, I think his time might be coming. And I think you make an excellent point about the magic thing. Because,
well, also,
you're right, he's not the...
There's a possibility he's hinted at while talking to Sansa that he might know Jon's true lineage, and it would just be a great twist of the knife to reveal that he knows and then off him.
That's true. That would be a good one. All right, so that's that one. Speaking of Jon's lineage, our next topic is about his aunt. Yes, about his aunt, Daenerys. And whether or not she considers burning down King's Landing. First of all, totally logical that she would consider burning it down because that's where her enemies are.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two things working against this theory. One is that I read a rumor that they are considering going back to what's that city where they film all the King's Landing stuff in?
Dubrovnik?
Dubrovnik. That they are considering going back to Dubrovnik for season 8. So that it wouldn't make sense to burn King's Landing down and then go back to where they shoot it. The second thing is that there is still a lot of currency in that being sort of where her ancestors are. All the Targaryen kings are buried in the crypts beneath the Red Keep. That's where all the dragon skulls are. And the Iron Throne is a Targaryen relic. So I don't see her burning it down. I think, and a lot of the production stuff we've seen bears out that she will try and meet her enemies outside of King's Landing. Like maybe try and isolate King's Landing by taking Highgarden and taking Casterly Rock or stuff like that. You know, getting an alliance with the North and having them try and take the Riverlands back or something like that. So if there's a strategy to it, isolating King's Landing is the best idea, because I think Tyrion, of all people, knows that you can't really just burn down the seat of power and expect to be able to rule the whole country.
Well, especially that's no way for a descendant of the Mad King to make a re-entry into the political sphere of Westeros.
Right.
Which I'm sure somebody has to bring up, like, you can't come and be another crazy Targaryen right at the start. Like, you need to chill out and actually rule. Otherwise, what did you spend all that time in Meereen learning? You were just going to go burn everything.
Why did Barristan give all those speeches about Rhaegar the Singer and then die?
Exactly.
Even though he's not dead in the books. So, yeah, no, that makes sense. I don't. This one doesn't pass the smell test to me for a number of reasons, and there's not really a ton. There is the sequence that's being described as Daenerys, Jon go and meet with Cersei, and they show them a White Walker in the dragon pit,
mm-hmm.
which, assuming that is a real thing in the way that it was shot. And I think it's pretty solid rumor. I feel like at some point Daenerys is going to have to decide whether or not she wants to rip the doors off of King's Landing and just rule the country, or whether or not she wants to be the person who saves humanity from the White Walkers. So
something has to happen. I think if there's a motion of this season that we're really going to care about, it's that motion. Is everybody going from, like, who's going to rule to, like, oh shit, wait.
Oh shit, it's not going to matter if we're all dead.
That's not the question. Yeah. But I also think that realization has to come to people at the end or towards the end of this season. If everybody does get together to see that a White Walker is real, that seems like a pretty episode 7 season 7 development to me, if I had to guess, just because I'm not sure where you go beyond that between, like, everybody buckle down and, you know, form your army. I mean, maybe you could lose Winterfell after that and just, like, nail it home that everything's going to shit. But I think if we start off early on with Dany getting to Westeros and then trying to do the politics, I don't think we necessarily have to wrap up the politics before everybody realizes that there's a real threat out there.
Right.
But maybe we have to lose Littlefinger. Who knows?
I do think it would be pretty messed up for, like, them to lose Winterfell after last year's battle and have just, like, Sansa die at the hands of the Night's King. And
I still think the show is going to be more like that than it's going to be everybody rallying together like Dino Riders.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. All right.
Dino Riders is an old cartoon that was based on the toy line, folks. It's a deep cut.
On to number 6. I'm counting backwards here.
All right.
In that flashbacks will continue. And this particular list that we're working off of says, with one focusing on Rhaegar and Lyanna's wedding, which strikes me as interesting because I did not know that Rhaegar and Lyanna did a wedding, mostly because Rhaegar was married when he abducted, quote unquote, Lyanna. So I think that maybe this is a little confusion around. I do think there are going to be more flashbacks. I do think Bran is going to get on the Wirewood Wi-Fi and he's going to see, because the audience needs more context for the Tower of Joy. Like the audience of my mom, who never read the books, needs to sort of understand a little bit more about what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't need a ton of that. Like, we don't. I think that a lot of Game of Thrones, like book readers, we would love to see like the tourney at Harrenhal. But I don't see a reason why that's necessary at this point. I think maybe there's like one more conversation to have with like young Ned about who this baby is and whose parents are and stuff like that. Maybe they'll answer what the name was.
Yeah. But
beyond that, I don't see a reason for them to keep going down this path of, unless they're going to introduce old Howland Reed, like, why go back to the well with the flashbacks to that particular flashback, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the Tower of Joy and continuing it directly seems weird. You're right that I don't think there was a wedding, but I'm not a reader, but it just doesn't make sense that you would have a ceremony for your secret
for your
love sex affair,
your secret poly wedding.
Yeah. But you're right in the sense that the viewers, I don't think Game of Thrones is necessarily a subtle show. It's more subtle than other HBO shows, but I mean, we did go through a whole season, I think the first season, where the question was who like sent an assassin for Bran, and I don't think we got the answer to that until like the third season or something. Point being, the show can subterfuge itself with something it decides it's not important. So it really depends on if these two, I think, are going to figure it out this season, or if it's going to be another weird capper that vaults us like even more tragically into another season where these two Targaryens don't actually know that they're lonely Targaryens. I don't know if that makes sense to me. But
like, will they know when they start to make out?
Oh man, that would be funny. Just like accidental incest while you're fighting against the incest queen.
Oh, now that is some George R. R. Martin darkness. Like, that's some just dark irony that I think I would not put past him. Is like, they take out Cersei because of the incest thing, but then they realize that they are the incest people now.
Are Targaryens in the truest sense.
Like, Daenerys sort of shuns, she decides to marry Jon Snow because she's going to shun the idea that Targaryens inbred for so many years. And her platform is then, let's take out the Lannisters because of all this incest. And then she realizes that, wow, okay, yeah, no, I think we came up with a really good one there. All right, I'm for it.
You're for secret incest?
I'm for secret incest that is revealed at the end, and everybody's like, shit.
Skywalker family legacy.
Yeah, cool.
Went down a good path with that one. Yep. Joanna's going to be real proud listening to this episode.
Yeah, God, I hope she's turned it off by now. All right, so we've got two more, but before we get to these two, I think we should probably take a break. And we are back, and we've got two more topics, and this is actually, it's funny, I'm scrolling through this list, having not read half of it. We already kind of talked about this one. We sort of spoiled it, our own list. So right, we have an episode of Storm of Spoilers where we spoiled the end of our own episode. This one is that Jorah will be cured of grayscale with the help from Samwell Tarly.
Hey, that sounds good.
That does sound good, although I did think that for a moment there was hope that like we would see Jorah go to like the dark lands of a Shai or somewhere cool and crazy and way off the beaten path. But it does make sense to a great degree that he would head to Old Town because he is from Westeros, and in Westeros, in the books and on the show, I guess, as well, Old Town is seen as the center of knowledge. It is the, you know, if you could imagine if they took all Ivy League schools and moved them to Oxford in the UK and put them all in like one fort, that's Old Town. And, so yeah, if you're got some grayscale and you're told to go get it cured, that's probably where I would go.
Do you think Stannis would have looked there as well, but in his long speech about trying to do that, but apparently...
Yeah, that's another one that you almost have to ask, like, did George R. R. Martin have a plan for this? Because when they talk about Shireen's grayscale, they're not very specific about what stopped it.
Mm-hmm.
So I always assumed reading the books that it was something Melisandre did, but that never really came to light. So now you look at a situation like Jorah, and I kind of have to wonder whether or not the Jorah grayscale thing ever ends up happening in the books, because it has not happened yet. It's what is it? John Connington, I think, has the grayscale in the books.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So
I forgot. I forgot that was a different character.
Right. And Tyrion thinks that he has grayscale. Like thinks he might get grayscale because he falls into the thing. He falls into the water during the attack of the grayscale dudes. What are they called?
The
Stonemen. There we go.
Stonemen.
I
was gonna say mudmen, but that's wrong.
I think that this is one of those show constructs that there's gonna be a lot of like hand waving where they're gonna like get to Old Town, and even though everything in this series has told us that grayscale is totally uncurable, you have to have a Hail Mary miracle to even stop the progression of it, they're going to figure it out in like a 10-minute scene.
They're going to be like, balm with essence of frog liver. Why did we never try this before? I could substitute in another Jorah spoiler, but this one's on much shakier ground. So they're currently filming a large battle scene that involves the Lannisters and the Tarleys that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There is at least part of it that involves some night shooting in what appears to be a Lannister caravan. And there's leaked video of somebody in a black cloak getting lit on fire from a fireball, which would imply dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to hear what he says, but he definitely seems to say Khaleesi right at the beginning. And Jorah is the only character who says that in pure English tongue, right? Who addresses her that way?
He's the only white dude that addresses her that way.
All right. So people are suspecting that Jorah's cloak gets lit on fire and he has to dive down to the ground. It does look like he's still moving. So I'm not saying Jorah's death is somewhere on the internet right now, but I'm saying some dragons get complicated.
So, and it is someone who's dressed in more traditional, like, it's not like a Dothraki.
Right, it's a person in like a dark cloak. So this could be how Jorah reestablishes himself after, you know, going to Old Town and coming back across his dragon queen in a different land, or it could be something completely different. People are debating whether or not he says, Khaleesi, what sort of witchcraft is this? Or Khaleesi, withdraw for assistance. So we don't really know anything except there's going to be some dragons in that fight. But it would seem like if there are Tarleys there and Jorah's there, this might be like a mid-season coalescing of some
right
forces.
Like, and if Jorah goes to Old Town and Sam helps cure him, and then Sam goes with him to maybe meet up with Daenerys and tell Daenerys what they've learned, they might Because that there is a road that goes from Old Town to King's Landing that goes right by Highgarden. Like, Highgarden's like the next big city on that I think it's called the Gold Road in the West.
Nice.
So, yeah, okay. That makes sense. You know, maybe he survives it because he's got grayscale.
Oh, hey. And then we learn his superpower.
Right.
For the fight ahead.
All right. So, yeah. So, you know, maybe Jorah gets cured and then dies. Maybe Jorah gets cured and then lives. We don't know yet. All right. So the last one is probably the most fun one from a hypothetical pixels standpoint, which is that one of Daenerys' dragons is killed and then raised by the Night's King, which fulfills the great long-standing listener prophecy of an ice dragon, essentially.
Yeah, which I've been psyched for. I thought it was in the wall, but this makes sense in a certain way. But yeah, this is rumored to also be a late season development, but would probably also be the thing that tips a whole bunch of other people into the Jon Snow cause. Because up until now, people know the Whites are coming and the Night's King's there, but it's only the Wildlings and Jon Snow really know that that's the focus of everything. So this would be a way to bring Daenerys around, even though I would be sad. But they would also throw out the whole the dragon has three heads being three dragon riders, presumably, theory,
right,
because there would just be an undead dragon. But yeah, you're right from a pixel standpoint. I'm interested to see what an undead dragon looks like, and I think it could take a lot of damage and still look like a skeletal, crazy ice dragon. So
yeah.
I'm excited for that. And I'm excited, you know, for a Song of Ice and Fire or Dance of Dragons of Ice and Fire next season, if that's where we're headed. But that being said, that seems like just a crazy thing to do.
It does, and yet it seems very on the nose thematically for the show. If this is truly a Song of Ice and Fire, it also seems like it kind of completes the metaphor of, like, when the wall comes down, there's an ice dragon inside of it. Like, that doesn't have to literally be an ice dragon in the wall. It could just mean that when the wall comes down, if there are dragons, the Night's King can take one if he wants.
Mm.
And I think that sort of brings it. That could be the show's way of translating a sort of metaphor into some sort of literal way to get a dragon on the other side.
Yeah, an evil dragon.
Evil dragons. So yeah, I think that's kind of fun. It's a really fun idea. A lot of the rumors that we've seen is that this, and you know what, from a narrative standpoint, this season, this part of the final season, which I think, even though this is season 7 versus season 8, this is really just half. This does feel like the Empire Strikes Back season, where it's got to end on a downer. Like, it's got to end badly for most of our heroes. And I think Daenerys is kind of the one who is ripe for the fall, because everything's going pretty well for her and it might continue to go well for a while. And if this, we are going to, as an audience, believe that she's just going to save the day, but that doesn't give us 6 more episodes.
Right.
At the end of the season, like, you have to, something bad has to happen to her. And I think the dragon, losing a dragon, having it turn to the dark side is, be a pretty good way to do it. Be a pretty good way to cast a pall over the whole situation south of the wall.
Yeah. Well, and that's like the one crazy thing that she hasn't been trained for in her ruling of various cities and peoples. It's what happens when someone takes her dragon.
Right. At that point, she's going to need the women of Dorne, because Dorne's the only ones that have ever killed a dragon. So there's that.
Oh, really?
Well,
that's Dorne, new book knowledge for
me. Dorne was the kingdom that repelled Aegon the Conqueror, and they were able to kill one of his dragons. And so Dorne is a uniquely skilled people. I don't know if this has anything to do with the current generation of Dornish leadership, which is, Oberyn's paramour and his daughters, but the Dornish warriors are, I feel like they could still come into play. I don't know. This is just me hoping that someday they resurrect they make the Dorne storyline matter. But
it could just like totally retroactively run. Save it on television.
Right. Just be like, oh my God, we need Dorne.
This is why we spent a little bit of time there.
Right.
For this. Right.
Cool. So that's our list. And I feel like, I feel pretty good. We talked about a lot of the big ones that are out there. We will at some point in the off season come back to this and do some more theory stuff when we have Joanna around, because I know she's got a lot of theories that she's going to want to talk about, especially now that Westworld is over and she could be free
have
of
some
Westworld.
CPU to dedicate to something else.
Right. And there's also the potential that the book is going to come out. So I think there could be a lot more to talk about later. So good visit to the Citadel.
For sure.
Yeah.
We're going to another holy place in fantasy worlds next week.
We sure are.
We're going back to a galaxy far, far away, which I always love returning to, but we're going back to the most hallowed period in Star Wars fandom. The period of the first Death Star. Neil, we're going to the holy city of Jedha, which you know tons more about because you spent this weekend learning more about Rogue One.
We do. I still don't know if I know more than you do, because I feel like there's a lot of... I will say this as a sort of a tease for next week. We are going to the holy city of Jedha. I learned this weekend that there was a Kyber crystal temple there. Hard for me to say whether it's still there, but there are characters that we meet who are very into the Kyber crystal religion. Is it a religion in sort of expanded universe terms?
Well, the Kyber crystals are the crystals that focus a Jedi's lightsaber, and
right.
We've seen them in the Clone Wars. We've seen Ahsoka, the Padawan of Anakin Skywalker, took a whole bunch of kids to the Kyber Crystal Cave, where they, sort of earned their crystals that they assembled into lightsabers. We learn a little bit more in the Star Wars Catalyst novelization prequel to Rogue One, where basically Jyn Erso's father, Galen, who will be played by Mads Mikkelsen in the movie,
right.
Is a scientist who has developed or was interested in developing a clean energy through Kyber crystal research, and the Empire had maybe other plans for it. And I believe that is exactly where Rogue One picks up, is when they have focused that plan into something much more deadly. And we'll see about that.
Yes. I can only confirm, without doing any spoilers, that we do meet Galen Erso.
Excellent.
He's in the movie. So we got all kinds of cool Rogue One stuff to talk about. The two of us, at the very least, will see Rogue One by the time mm-hmm. we talk next week. I think Joanna might. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see.
Well, and the good news is that the embargo that I've been told is before our review. Two
right.
episodes, so we're gonna go all in.
The premiere is this weekend, so we'll be able to do not only a sort of general review for everybody who likes non-deep spoilery, but we could also go very deep on it. And I will be curious, especially based on some of the stuff that I saw, to pick your brain on some of the nods to the original trilogy and some mm-hmm. of the characters that show up that we don't maybe know about yet. And I will also be curious to see sort of how it all fits, because I've heard a lot of stuff about Rogue One's ending and how that is one of the things maybe they were a little worried about. And even though we know kind of how it ends, so we'll see if the how well it ties up together. Because I can tell you that I've seen the first 20 minutes of the movie, and they're very good. And so if the last 20 minutes are also good, I think we're in for a good ride with Rogue One.
Yes. So you're on team. You just want Darth Vader to murder everybody, right?
Oh, for sure.
That's my team.
I'm okay with... So ideally, Rogue One would end for me one of two ways. Either Vader shows up and just murders everyone, and like one person escapes and delivers the plans, or like they deliver the plans and then he shows up and murders everyone, or they all live and they set a course for Alderaan at the end.
Well, see, I mean, we know we're gonna see Bail Organa, so I'm waiting for the groan line where he's like, I'm gonna go wait on Alderaan for the safe return of my daughter.
Yeah, so there's gonna be stuff like that. I'm also curious to see, wasn't there a rumor that we're gonna get what's his name as Han Solo, new Han Solo in this movie?
I from what I heard back at when these rumors were happening, there were a couple of scenes that were open to cameos from original trilogy characters. They definitely cast him where he could be in one of those scenes. But no one slipped up in the very tight-lipped thus far Rogue One press,
right,
as to who those cameos are going to be.
I will say this, there was in the press conference sort of openness to the fact that we're never going to see most of these characters again. Whether yeah. that is an openness because, as Gareth Edwards said during the press conference, this movie already has a sequel. It's called Rogue Two: A New Hope. Or because they all die in this movie, we'll see. It could go either way. I will say that in the limited amount of time I got to spend with them, there are characters that I would like to see again. There's just no reason for them to make a sequel unless they're going to make Rogue Two, the story of how many Bothans died for the second plans.
Well, that's actually in Shadows of the Empire when Dash Rendar fails to shoot the missile that's coming at the Blue Squadron, flown by Bothans. But that's another topic for another time, I'm sure, because that's
nice.
Absolutely non-canonical. So until then, when we could geek out after having seen Rogue One and unlocked all of its secrets, Neo, where can people find the rest of your work on the internet?
You can find me at filmschoolrejects.com. You can find me on Twitter at Rejects. You can also get the show at Storm of Spoilers on Twitter. And as of this week, you can now get us on Facebook, facebook.com/Storm of Spoilers, where we will be posting all kinds of Facebook things for those of you who don't do Twitter, or for those of you who need to take some time off of Twitter because of real life sometimes.
Yeah. Or so. You could like go to the Storm of Spoilers, like our posts, and the more you like our posts, the more it gets shoved in your friends' news feeds.
Right.
And we could do all that fun stuff.
We would like
back
to
against fake news.
Right. We would like to push out fake news and have real spoilers in everyone's feed. So do that.
It's gonna be sweet. Maybe just, yeah, be careful with the sport. You know what? You guys do whatever you want. Your listeners, you know your stance on spoilers. You've heard my gums flap about it. I'm right. Dave Gonzalez. I'm on Twitter at DA7E. I blog at geek.com. Doing some work at Thrillist.com, including an upcoming piece on Shadows of the Empire, which is why I had that knowledge on the tip of my brain. And you can find my other podcasts at FightingInTheWarRoom.com. And until next week, where we return to one of my favorite properties, just like we were just in one of my favorite properties with Harry Potter, and I spent all this time learning about Game of Thrones. Continue being awesome, listeners. See you soon.